this?
Jimi Hendrix.
No, I know who it is, but why are you playing Jimi?
Well, because I like to listen to him.
Oh, you like to listen? That's what the fucking problem is. Y'all listen.
Well, what am I supposed to do? Eat it?
No. You're supposed to hear it.
Hey, I just said I like to listen to it, man.
No. There's a difference between hearing and listening.
Welcome to
Naming It, where we discuss pop culture, current events, and how they relate to the way that we live our lives, all through the lens of two black psychologists.
Naming It is dedicated to acknowledging the elephant in the room, validating the lived experience of people of color. Coming to you from the Bay Area, California, we thank you for joining us.
I'm Dr. Bethford Palmer.
And I'm Dr. Lamisha Hill. Music on Naming It is provided by Lee England Jr., the soul violinist. Good morning, evening, afternoon.
Yeah.
Welcome to Naming It.
Welcome to Naming It, y'all.
It's episode 46.
Yeah, 46. You came in kind of sharp on that welcome to you, like, hit people, like, naming it. Like, what did you?
You know, every day is something a little different. You know, we do it differently every time. Okay. So you're going to get...
Well, if you're trying to emphasize something just now. But, you know, it's episode 46. Last time we did episode 44.
Something's happening there.
Something's not happening there.
That's true. I think that we skipped a number, kind of like a fancy hotel elevator.
Yeah, because bad luck, right? Because you don't have number 13 because 13th floor caused bad luck. Right. Just like you don't have precedent number 40 something.
Moving on.
So we're moving on, exactly. Like... I feel like later in my life, I'm going to think about the presidents that I experienced, and I'm going to think about 44, and then I'm immediately going to jump to 46, right? Because otherwise, I'm just going to have a headache for that memory moment. So,
I'm having a headache right now, thinking that it's only been a year. This has been the longest year ever.
It's not the long. It's the same time. It's just
okay.
Yeah.
Positive stuff, y'all. Yeah, we're not going to bring you down that road.
Some positive stuff.
Well, different things. We got some shout-ins. Here we go.
So, why don't you go ahead and give yours?
So, I want to give a shout-in to my colleague, Noemi Hollander, who responded to our questions and comments about the Women's March. And so, I just want to say hey to Noemi. Also want to give a shout in to future Dr. Angel Rosario. Thank you so much for listening and being a true namer. And last but not least, I want to give a shout in to a group of amazing folks that are part of a collective of the UC Women's Initiative. Folks were really super responsive and positive when I shared about the podcast with them, and they are all listening.
Yeah, cool. Thank you. Welcome, y'all. My quick shout in. I want to shout in Dr. Valene Whitaker. She nominated us for to do an address at the American Psychological Association convention. So, she basically nominated us, and apparently they've decided to have us do the Best in Practice address in August, which is crazy. And, like, I don't even know what to say except for thank you for thinking of us. And we look forward to, like, doing that address. It's something that is not – I don't think young professionals like us tend to have an opportunity to do something like that. And so holding it down for ECPs and doing all that stuff. Just wanted to say thank you, Valene, and thank you to that committee. And we'll be looking forward to August.
Yeah, Division 17.
Yeah, Society of Counseling Psychology, because we're both counseling psychologists.
We are. And speaking of psychologists, can I give a shout in to ACPA and the upcoming Mosaic Symposium?
Your upcoming Mosaic Symposium?
All right. It's a committee. It's a group effort.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just going to let me call the committee real quick. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Who's the chair? Oh, yeah. It's Dr. LaMisha Hill.
It's
who
a
put the committee together?
It's a committee, y'all.
Who put it together?
It's a collective effort. It's a collective effort.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
We go far together.
I love the committee. I think the committee is awesome and they're wonderful folks. And like, it's the first time we've had a really functional committee in a very long time.
Absolutely.
You know, but I think that they would all agree that you are the connecting force and you just need to own that. So just own it. You don't have to say nothing else. Okay? Just sit in that. I'm sure they're with me on this because we acknowledge them. They're awesome. And you're supposed to do what you're doing, but I'm just going to tell you, be quiet and accept it.
Thank you.
All right. There we
but
go.
I want to tell our listeners that y'all need to hit up the Alameda County Psychological Association website. That's alamedapsych.com. And you can find the registration page for this awesome event. We're going to have a number of keynote speakers for y'all professionals out there. There are 5.5 CEs that you can receive and come to this event and learn more about how to engage in these dialogues around diversity and around difference so that we can be in the spirit of allyship together. Did you have any more shout-ins, Bedford? No, I kind of jumped in there on you.
I'm good.
You good?
Yeah, we can move into that. Well, it's a thing that's personal, so it feels like that. But let's talk about what's going on.
All right, play the jams.
All right, so go ahead, y'all do that.
What's going on?
Hey, going on?
What's going on?
You just clip that and use that for the rest of the time. You guys
All right, so what's going on? There's a lot of things going on right now, actually. But let's start with, like, some of the cooler, lighter stuff, and we'll get into the other stuff as we go. So, Black Nerd, all day, Marvel, DC, Star Wars.
Own it.
All of it.
Own
you know
it.
What I'm saying? Anime, Naruto, all of it, right?
Own it.
Yo, what's up? How many people out there have seen the first two episodes, possibly the first three, if you're waiting until later in the week, of Black Lightning?
Martin had a dream. We all know this city is in a crisis. Martin had a dream. But this neighborhood is no oasis of hope.
These are my streets. Money and pirates. Black Lightning is dead.
It's time that the people know Black Lightning is back.
Thought you were done being a hero.
Brother needs all the exercise he can get.
Do you know what Black Lightning is?
I do not. I don't.
You haven't? I showed you.
Yeah, okay. I know. You, in preparation for this conversation, you did give me the Cliff Notes version on the YouTube, and it looks super cool, but no, I don't know. What's up with Black Lightning?
Okay.
Tell me a little bit about the premise.
So, first of all, Black Lightning is a DC character, right? So if you know the difference between Marvel and DC.
What is DC?
Oh, Lord. We're not going to do that. For the people who don't know that, go look up Marvel DC. They're just two different studios. They're two different studios, two different comic
book
universes, two different
The average layperson, I'm thinking you're talking about, District of Columbia.
Okay, look. Superman is DC. Batman is DC. Spider-Man is Marvel. Avengers is Marvel. They're separate. They don't exist in the same universe.
They're
different. Okay? It's like Star Trek versus
Star Wars. Okay, so that's why, like, Batman never goes at Spider-Man.
Yeah. That's why.
Okay. Because they're in two separate
universes.
Superhero universes.
Yes.
Okay, got it.
So, Black Lightning was one of DC's attempts to kind of bring a black superhero to prominence. And it I don't know if the franchise actually worked out very well when it came out and like how far it went. It's obviously not like Batman or Superman in terms of popularity. Hashtag racism. But what I can say is like there's been a lot of different iterations. Like Black Lightning showed up on cartoons. I don't know. We didn't check to see if he had his own cartoon series, but he did. There was a series called Static Shock that a lot of people who are probably like millennial folks would probably recognize, because that came on right after the Batman Superman hour.
Y'all know I'm just looking at Bedford with a very blank face.
Well, you can look at me like that. There are people who appreciate this. My blurs out there understand this, and like the other general nerds understand it.
I'm gonna let you go because typically, if we get off,
this isn't off. This is on point.
It sounds like we need to join forces with another podcast community to talk about the intersections of superheroes, comic books, anime, television, and the rest of it.
Hey, if we want to get together, can we put together a league, a Justice League, Avengers,
that would be super cool.
Or like some, we get a team up. I'm just gonna put it out there. Hopefully, one of y'all listening, we could get with Jedi Council. We can get with Black Tribbles. We can get with Blurred. Maybe the Nod, because it was like a black nerd, but now it's the Nod. Now I'm just saying, any of y'all want to get together and do like a panel? We should do a panel, y'all. But anyway,
we can make that happen.
Let's yeah. I want that. We're going to do that. So, in terms of Black Lightning, here's the piece. So, Static Shock was like a teenage version, not exactly Black Lightning. He's not the same character. But it was like another way of bringing black people in. They use the same electricity bit, and it's cool. So, here's what we're at now. CW has all the superheroes, like, from the DC universe. They got, like, you know, the Green Arrow. They got the Flash. They got Supergirl now. They have the different pieces. Heroes of Legends of Tomorrow, all that stuff. Now, they've included Black Lightning. Here's the thing. Black Lightning is not in those other universes, right? So the other ones cross over. Black Lightning apparently is in a different dimension, which is normal for Marvel. From DC. Because Supergirl's in a different dimension than the other ones too. So hopefully they'll be able to do a crossover at some point, but I think it might just be completely separate. Here's the thing about Black Lightning. It takes place, just like most DCs, in a fictional city that is character connects to the hero, right? Mm-hmm. Metropolis is Superman. Gotham is Batman. It's Freedom City, I think, is where he's at. And obviously the Freedom piece has something to do with black folks. But, you know, from the beginning of the first scene until you get into it, the cast is almost entirely black. The vernacular is black. The jokes are black. They use like quotes from black history in the first 5 minutes, like having a father and daughter going back and forth using quotes of famous black historic figures in order to make an argument poignant. It was so black, yo. It was so black. I felt like my melanin. Like, I got a tan watching that. You know what I'm saying? Boy. It was so good. It was so good. Oh, it was so good.
That is a hashtag right there. It was so black.
I got a tan, yo. Like, it was dope. So, I mean, maybe we'll go into, like, the mechanics of it at one point. But, like, they really went to a space of unabashed, like, we're going to talk about the police thing, we're going to talk about the gang thing, we're going to bring in the superhero piece, we're even going to, like, throw in some intersectionality, because one of the characters is his sidekick, who's also his daughter, is a black lesbian who is an activist and a teacher. She's a teacher and a nurse, it looks like she's gonna like be like the heavy hitter. Mm-hmm. So it's not like it's not even like they do sometimes where they make the female superheroes dainty. Like, mm-hmm. She's busting heads. So this is gonna be dope from so many perspectives. If y'all ain't seen it, y'all need to get on it.
Y'all can tell that Bedford's excited.
I'm excited.
He's excited, y'all.
Black Lightning. Then Black Panther, and if the season goes until like the summer, maybe right when it ends, I'm gonna get my Luke Cage back. I'm just saying, I got the whole 2018 is looking real nice right now.
For your entertainment,
yes, it's a year for the blurs, y'all. The 2018 is blurred year.
Okay,
on the lunar calendar.
Can I ask one other question?
Okay,
I think you went to a show this past week or so?
Oh, what? Yes, I did go to a show.
Did you go to a show?
I went to, so you are...
In Oakland?
So first of all, I'd like to tell everyone, I would like to thank my co-host on air, apparently. I need to do that. Because she got me and my wife tickets to the W. Kamau Bell playlist at the Oakland Symphony, which was amazing. It was amazing. W. Kamau Bell, he hosted it and he made jokes throughout and like he talked about his playlist. The playlist was awesome. It started off with the Black National Anthem, which was dope because people in the place didn't know whether they wanted to stand or not. The white folks didn't know that they should stand, and then the black folks stood. And we were like, no, this is a Black National Anthem. We don't just sit for the Black National Anthem. We stand for the Black National Anthem, just like any other anthem. What are y'all talking about? And in fact, W. Kamau Bell said something that I completely agree with. The third verse of the National Anthem for the United States of America is a verse that's deeply racist and mm-hmm. speaks about slavery and killing black people mm-hmm. and all that, and we never know about it. Mm-hmm. If you want to talk about a more appropriate national anthem, if you want to talk about this for real, let's talk about replacing the racist national anthem for the anthem that black folks use, which actually fits the history of the United States. Not just in terms of like, oh, it's just about black people, but when we're talking about like mm-hmm. moving through mm-hmm. the pain of the past, that's all of us. Mm-hmm. Like, so if there's a campaign, I'm all for it. Like we need to do hashtag Black National Anthem, U.S. National Anthem, or Black National Anthem, all of our national anthem. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to change that mug because I ain't really trying to. I'm not here for it anymore. And I used to love that. I played football. I did all that stuff. It was important to have the national anthem. It made a tear in my eye. But then I heard the third verse, and so fuck that. I'm done. Black National Anthem. And thank you, Lamisha, for sending us. It was really awesome.
I'm glad you enjoyed yourself. Yeah. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
So, where are we at now?
We're moving forward.
We're moving forward.
Yeah.
We're moving into it.
Okay, so now that we hyped up, I'm hyped up. Are you hyped up?
I'm ready to go. It was a good warm up.
Okay,
so I think there's something else that went on recently that is going to be the bulk of our content today.
Yeah,
we're going to talk about this Women's March 2.0.
Is it 2.0 or is it the same anniversary?
Well, you know, yeah. Did we get a different iteration? I don't know.
So last time we talked about this was right after the last march. So we have an episode called Ain't I a Woman? I would strongly urge folks to go check that episode out again because I think this is a rejoiner to it. And we're going to talk about the progress and maybe the lack of progress mm-hmm. since that first march. What do you think?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's get into it. Did you want me to read some of these comments?
Do you want me to set that up? I'll set that up.
Go for it.
So we sent out some feelers. We sent a tweet. We sent out tweets and we sent out Facebook messages asking for namers and some of our friends to respond to just asking. We asked the question of what did you think about the Women's March? Did you go? How was it for you? Did you feel welcomed? And we got some response. We got some in text and we got some recordings. So let's talk about we got a real poignant one. I think we should start off with it's short and sweet and mm-hmm. it's from an anonymous namer. Let's go with that one first.
All right. So our anonymous namer says, in quote, "I have zero guilt about Trump. White people and women elected him, and their guilt is not my march. They bisected the Democrats to chasing their boy, Bernie. Until intersectionality is on the table, it isn't my march. It feels like that the Women's March was for women to bond and mourn, but I don't have guilt. I was all Hillary all day one, and my people didn't put her in office, and I'm still mad."
So, yeah, that hit me in the gut, right? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, that's, I think the right word is poignant.
I think it is, too. And just to, you know, like, you know, highlight, you know, that I am curious about, you know, in the Bay Area, who knows? I'm not even going to say that. I'm going to retract that. That folks are marching out their guilt mm-hmm. because there's no way that Donald Trump wouldn't have been elected without the tickets being punched by an overwhelming majority of white folks and white women included in that process.
Right.
So that's just a reality.
I mean, I think it speaks to the commentary that's been on this march from the beginning, starting with that photo, starting with that photograph that Angela Peoples put out. I don't know if y'all remember it. We put it up multiple times, but it's basically a picture of her standing with the sign that says, "Don't forget white women voted for Trump," in front of white women doing selfies with the pink hats on during the first march. And she's it's iconic, I think, because she's sucking a lollipop, looking to the side, holding the sign. Mm-hmm. It's a dope picture that's been recirculated lately. But like, I think that that's that really like pulled together this sentiment of like, hey, y'all are, it seems like there's this idea that folks are being tourists.
Right.
You know, and like, what's this about? Like, are y'all really about intersectional feminism and justice for all, or are you just like coming out to support yourselves?
Right. So you had another person responded.
And one of our colleagues also sent us a text.
Okay.
And, she had a little bit longer analysis of it.
All right. And so the text that she sent, I'm just going to read it out for y'all. And it's really in line with that photo that Bedford just talked about. So just have that picture and that image in the background as I read this to you. And she wrote, "I didn't go to the Women's March this year. It wasn't an intentional decision, just that I had other plans. But as much as I was happy I participated in the first one last year, I felt it left a slightly bad taste in my mouth. Usually, I find marches to be spaces of solidarity and passion, but the marches last year felt like fluff. A lot of people just making jokes and taking selfies, chanting things that were transphobic and homophobic, and then huge swaths of people not getting involved in Black Lives Matter chants. It struck me as incredibly sad. So I was not compelled to participate this year. The march last year was not a space for people to grieve, be enraged, and take comfort in each other. That was my experience. It felt hollow. I want to be supportive of people newly engaging in activism and recognize that not everybody knows the right language or way to be an activist spaces. But I wish people could be committed to learning and have a sense of humility as they enter this work. And also stick with it. Not going to one or two marches and bail. Get involved with your community. Have hard conversations. Stay in this."
Yeah. So, yeah, like, what do you think about that?
I think it's spot on that it is recognizing, you know, I think the developmental arc of people coming into their place around activism, but also, you know, people not reading the primary instructions and the principles of agreement. And that first, that being of cultural humility, right? Don't step into a space and join a line of people, you know, walking down the street and hee-haw with your friends having a good time without much recognition or acknowledgement of the purpose of why you're there.
Right, right. So, like, the lack of reverence, mm-hmm. a lack of seriousness.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it denotes a lack of connection to the actual struggle.
Right.
You know, so, like, people who take this seriously, they do so not because it's stylistic or fun.
Uh-huh.
They do so because it's a matter of life or death.
Right.
You know, and so, and I think that that's one of the problems with that people have had with this particular expression,
mm-hmm.
is that it's still questionable. Like, where is it coming from? Mm-hmm. Like, what does it mean? Like the first quote that we used, the first text that we got kind of was pointing out that she felt that it was a issue of politics. Like, this was about white guilt around Trump, mm-hmm. you know, and like a rebuff to Trump. Whereas other folks say that it's about intersectional feminist identity. And then other folks just say, no, this is about white feminists, mm-hmm. you know. And I think that that might be, I don't know if that's the crux of the conflict, is like, which one of these identities is true. I also think that we have to also acknowledge that there are different marches in different places, and different marches in different places had different kind of characters.
Correct.
So, you know, we're in the Bay Area, so there's a march in Oakland, and there's also a march in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And there's probably a different character to those different marches. There's marches in D.C., there's marches in New York, there's marches all over the place. I think that each different place is going to have different leadership and kind of come off differently, so we can be aware of that, but mm-hmm. then focus in on the places that we know of.
Right.
Yeah.
So we got one more caller that we want to put up.
Yeah. Yeah. So this caller is one of our past guests.
Yes.
And we wanted to invite, do you want to
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
So my best friend fellow psychologist, Dr. Yeah. Diana Pena, took the time to share her reflections, and Beffer's going to play them right now.
Hey, y'all. It's Diana Pena, psychologist in East Bay, California, and I just thought I'd share my impressions of the Women's March. I was able to attend a little bit last week. Yeah, I thought there was some really positive things that I saw happening. I really appreciated that at the very end of the march, there were opportunities for folks to engage in social action. I think that was my big question as I was walking along and seeing folks show up. You know, that question of, yeah, but given the year we've had, you know, what are you doing outside of marching and wearing shirts? You know, what kind of civil action are you engaging in? And so that was kind of a relieving thing to see, that there were some opportunities and that there was conversation about action. I had really mixed feelings about going in general, and certainly when I was there, it was unfortunate to see so many folks wearing the pink hats, especially given all the feedback that was so public about how that really was not inclusive of gender nonconforming folks, and even some folks of color that really felt like it just wasn't representative and really missed the racial and gender injustice that's been happening and that is still so rampant in our society. I think what was beautiful about going, and something that I guess I never really want to lose sight of in terms of what I do appreciate about a certain part of that movement, is the, when I see the girls in the street, I see the girls taking their voice, learning that they too have a voice, that they're important, and in some way, shape, or form, really being reminded that that they have a voice and that they have power, and that gives me hope for the next generation. So yeah, those are some of my thoughts. Wasn't there for the entire thing, so can't really speak on the whole thing, but hope that's helpful. Thanks so much for what y'all do every week, and thanks for helping us all keep naming it. Bye.
What did you think? I mean, like, that was, so this is a person who actually went to the march, because mm-hmm. the first two people, like, they said, we're good, right? Mm-hmm. So this person actually went. She's a person of color. This was the Oakland march, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what are your thoughts?
I mean, I appreciated how Dee had recognized that at the end, like, the piece around, there was more recognition and opportunity for civil engagement, and whether or not there were folks in the community of organizers who were letting people know and keeping folks informed, either signing up people up for things or, you know, maybe more tabling and more representation for opportunities to get involved. I think that was really, really important. And I love the hopefulness about, you know, the next generation. Because what I saw, because I live right downtown Oakland, and what I saw was that people brought their families, people brought their kids, people, you know, had the, you know, baby carriers on their backs, you know, their children holding different signs. And there was a lot of acknowledgement around electing, supporting, and protecting Black women. Mm-hmm. And that coming, that message coming from people who were not visibly Black identified. So I'll just say it that way. You know, I don't know how those individuals identified, but clearly it felt like there was an intersectional acknowledgement to support folks outside of your own background, and that's really, really important.
So go ahead.
I was just gonna jam on to the next point, which would springboard us into real talk, because
I want to ask you though, before we go there, is mm-hmm. Because you were at the last one, right? You saw the last pieces of the last one, right?
I saw the last pieces, right. Uh-huh.
Like, did you feel a difference, like so if we think about it from then to now, did you feel a difference when you were involved in this one versus the last one?
You know, I think that my perspective is probably a little skewed, because I live in downtown Oakland. And uh-huh. so the audience that's going to come into that space are people that, you know, are very diverse, that are representing a lot of different communities, queer communities, POC communities. And then also, you know, there are still, you know, white folks in the community, and a lot of older white folks and older white folks that might identify as LGBT. So there's that representation there. And so I don't know if it's the best picture, but I still saw the pink hats. Like, okay. You know, the pink hats were still popping. But there was still a lot of, I also saw a lot of families and a lot of folks of color and folks, you know, representing those intersectional identities.
I guess so. Like last year, you said you didn't see much of that. You just saw like kind of interlopers in the community.
Mm-hmm.
So would you say that there was like a better representation this year, or would you say it's kind of the same?
That's going to be hard for me to say because I didn't go into the largest space to really get a feel for, you know, what kind of the distribution was.
I wanted to hear what you know. So, so what were we going to?
But, you know, the point that Dee had made was that there was what she saw and what she noted was that there was still an overwhelming presence of pink hats, and really folks really not hearing that message of why those hats are problematic and not understanding both the racial issues and the gender nonconforming issues and the experience that that is having on folks really participating and saying, no, I want to put myself in the middle of a space where clearly people are not hearing. Right. And so if we go back to the awesome introduction that you played to the beginning of the episode.
Right. Folks ain't, you know, you can't just hear. I mean, you can't just listen to Jimmy. You got to hear him.
You can't just listen.
Yeah.
So can we get into real talk?
Let's get into real talk. So real talk.
Real talk.
All right. So I think that the whole piece about hearing and listening is it's really an important part. I don't know if folks have been watching our social media, but right after the march and stuff, like one of the things that kind of popped up was this idea that, I mean, white folks didn't listen. Like white women didn't listen to black women and to trans women and to other folks who were involved in the community about these pink hats and about certain, you know, just like this idea of the mood of the march. Like, it's not that the fundamental premises of the march aren't important and that people didn't support them, because there's widespread support in a lot of communities. The issue is that even with that widespread support, when the feedback was given last year, it's a simple thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's a super simple thing to change imagery, right? If you heard the feedback. And it's not that everyone has to hear it, okay? So, like, let's say, oh, half of these people aren't really in social media. They're not in the circles. They don't hear that stuff, right? But the organizers had to have heard it. They could have put a message out that they're going to change symbols and not to bring the hats. They could have educated and talked about that, and they didn't do that.
Right.
So what
are you thinking? So is it a reality of they didn't know, they didn't hear, or they don't care? And I think we're on that. For me, I think it's on the they don't care.
Yeah.
And here's why. So I did a little research, went online and Googled some stuff up, and there is the Pussy Hat Project trademark.
Okay.
So go ahead and Google that yourself. And there is a clear acknowledgement of a response to criticism that the creators of the Hat Project put together. And this response was written January 14th. So this is prior to the second iteration of the march.
Okay.
And they're saying, and first, I'm going to quote just a little bit here and there, some snippets, and it's not taken out of context, so you can read the whole thing yourself.
Can you put that on the newsletter?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It will be in the newsletter. So, in quote, it says, some feel that the hat is a literal symbol of female anatomy promoting trans-exclusionary radical feminism. Thank you for speaking up with your criticisms. We hear you. End quote.
Did they hear, or did they listen? Because it sounds like they just listened.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too. And what we're going to get into is the next paragraph. It says, participation, the core of the Pussy Hat Project. So the first paragraph, the author goes into their personal story and expresses that the project comes out of them being both a designer and a person with a disability, and says more about their identity and their background.
Right.
Now, that may be true, but what's the problem with that?
Well, I mean, like, I guess I'm wondering how does that connect with the conception of the hat? Like,
right. So the reason why we're bringing this up is because the point of the article that the author wrote was to respond to the criticism.
Right.
And so if you're really listening, you're going to respond to the criticism, one, that the hats don't represent folks of different backgrounds and that they are not speaking to both racial identity and also transphobia, right?
Right.
So let's respond to those issues. That's the criticism.
Right.
But the article says, we hear you, but they don't respond to the issues.
Right.
They start in with a reflection on where the hats come from and as it connects to their personal identity and their personal story.
Right.
And so going to utilizing some of the foundations of logical fallacies.
Okay.
That's where we came up. It's not to say that those things aren't important about the author and their identity. They're not responding to the criticism.
Right.
And it's representative of a way in responding to things that creates a logical fallacy.
Right. So, another example is like when you have a conversation and you might call someone out for being, you might call a black man out for being misogynistic.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, well, but I'm black, so I understand. And then doesn't really deal with the fact of talk about his male privilege or talk about the issues mm-hmm. that come from his maleness and just wants to focus on or brings up the blackness in order to shut down the conversation. Similarly, you could do that with white folks who say that, I come from a poor background.
Right.
And so, racism and all that stuff, it can't exist because I was able to blah, blah, blah. Right.
Right. So there's two logical fallacies that are working through this article. Indirectly, it says that it's a response to the criticism, but they don't respond to those two core pieces of criticism. Logical fallacy number one is an appeal to the emotion.
Mm-hmm.
So appeal to emotion is by responding to an argument that is characterized by the manipulation of the recipient's emotions in order to win an argument, especially in the absence of factual evidence.
Okay.
That's the quote.
All right.
That's the definition.
That's what that kind of fallacy is.
It is. So by interjecting an emotional, by invoking the ethos, by talking about your background and your identity, while all that might be true, is taking off the core issue, right? You're not responding to the core issue. You're going to bring into something that appeals to the emotion.
Right. And so if y'all are listening, like, why are they giving us a rhetoric lesson, right? So I think it's important to understand this because one of the main reasons that we started naming it was so that we could talk about how to have these conversations.
Mm-hmm.
These logical fallacies, whether you're talking about this appeal to emotion or whether you're talking about like straw men, which like is about you making up an argument that's not really the argument so that we can argue that point instead of the point we made, or ad hominem attacks where people actually attack the person and the character of the person instead of their argument. These are all ways that people in power will silence people mm-hmm. who don't have power.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually, I mean, it's so old that like the Greeks were talking about it, and I'm sure they probably, you know, stole that from the Comedic folk, but you know, the Greeks have it cataloged and whatnot.
They sure do. So can I get into logical fallacy number two? If you continue on reading the article, it goes into responding to the colors of the hats and says that it's opening a dialogue, but still doesn't open a dialogue. And logical fallacy number two is the red herring. When a speaker attempts to distract an audience by deviating from the topic at hand by introducing a separate argument that the speaker believes is easier to speak to.
Right. So how'd they do that?
So by talking about the color of the hat, does the color represent female anatomy? Does the color feminine? It's easy to talk about the color, right? But what you ain't talking about is racism and transphobia.
Right. Right.
And gender nonconforming folks.
Right. So they're like basically like putting these questions out about the color, but they're not speaking to those issues, and they're not saying that they're going to change anything,
mm-hmm.
right?
Nope.
Because they've got a trademark and they're making money off of it.
Right. So in response, and I think to really kind of wrap this piece up, it's, you know, if you really want to have a conversation and express that you're hearing folks, talk about the core issues, talk about the racism, talk about the transphobia, speak on those issues.
Well, but if they're listening, but I don't think they're listening. So when people don't speak to those issues, I think we have to be able to call them out on that. You know,
mm-hmm.
we have to be able to say what they're doing in order to bypass the whole argument. Because you can't. Here's a thing about like getting into rhetorical debates. If you go down the rabbit hole, if you allow the fallacy to stand, if you allow that reality to be created and you argue to it, then the person who's pushing the fallacy wins the discussion because you've just given all your time and energy to talking about something that's not real.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be able to kind of cut past, cut through, cut around, do whatever, not deal with the fallacy. Take the fallacy, throw it out, put it in the garbage, and stick to your point, right? So when someone asks you, like, you know, what's the problem with the hat? Like, you ask them, why can't they see that it has these problems around intersectionality? Why can't they understand that when trans people say that this isn't representative and that it actually pushes forward like a transphobic message, that maybe you should listen to those people because it's their experience, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's kind of, you know, what Dr. Thomas Parham said. I think I've said this before on the show, but he always put this out as the way you respond to challenges around when you say that racism or sexism or any of the isms exist. You don't argue the point. You don't say this is why it exists. You say, why wouldn't it? Right. So if we have a country, a history or whatever that tells us that all of these nasty isms have impacted people negatively, right? Like impacted them economically, impacted them financially, impacted mm-hmm. them physically, right? Mm-hmm. Has taken their lives. Then with all the history and all the evidence that's already out there, you tell me why this isn't a sexist situation or this isn't a racist situation or this isn't a heterosexist situation or a homophobic situation. Like you have to, the burden's on you because history is mm-hmm. behind me. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's kind of the way to cut through these arguments and get down to the bone of it.
Right. Beautiful. Yeah. So if you want to talk about the hats at all, it's going to be tell me why the hats are not transphobic.
Right. Like tell us how they're inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, explain to us why we should not listen to the communities that are being impacted, and we should listen to the people who are benefiting or the people who just don't care, right? And I think that that's an important piece to kind of, I don't know, I feel like that's a good takeaway.
I think it's a wonderful takeaway.
Yeah.
All right. Well, overall, I think this episode was really short and sweet.
Are we done?
Yeah, we got to the point. We hit it. We hit it hard. We don't need to belabor it.
So, I mean, I'm thinking, you know, as we think about this whole issue of like the Women's March and these hats and all that stuff, we keep skirting around this issue. We talked about this with the Oprah piece. We talked about this with Ain't I a Woman. We talked about this with Black Women Ain't Saving. Like, there seems to be some sort of like piece about intersectionality and feminism, mm-hmm. right? Intersectional feminist thought, like. And they're, from what I've seen on social media, what I'm hearing from friends, just my own observation, there needs to be some sort of addressing of intersectional feminist thought and white feminist thought.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, what's going on there? And I don't know, like, we don't have time to do that today, but I'm wondering if this is something that we might want to explore later. So if it's cool with you, I think we might put out a call and see if folks want to discuss this. We invite folks to, like, use our phone number. What's the number?
607,
you name it. Send us, you know, your feedback, your thoughts on that idea of the conflict between this intersectionality versus, like, monocultural, monoracial, like, interactions. And, like, maybe we might have a co-host or a guest.
Someone who's really deep in that literature, and maybe that's an area of their expertise that they want to come and share some insights with us to help drive this conversation a little bit further.
Yeah. So, and, you know, it's interesting because we're moving into Black History Month, and we're also got Women's History Month right after that. So maybe we need to talk about the intersection between Blackness and feminism. Maybe that's a deal.
Right.
All right.
It certainly is.
Okay. So can we close it down?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's wind down.
Wind down. I haven't had lunch yet. I can't drink no wine, man. All right, so let's go ahead and close it out.
All right, so if you like what you heard on the show, please, please, please leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher.
Right, right. And for details about topics mentioned on this episode, check out our website, namingitpodcast.com, and follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Naming It Podcast.
And while you're on the website, go ahead and scroll down and make sure you sign up for our newsletter, because after every episode, we send out special bonus content that will have all the articles, all of the topics, special information to help talk about the themes a little bit further. So join the newsletter.
All right.
So where can I find you on social media?
DRBF Palmer, at DRBF Palmer. And what about you?
And Beffer is always on social media, so please definitely hit him up, because your girl is hit and miss. But you can find me on Twitter at Lamisha Hill.
Okay, and what's our last part?
We always want to give a very special shout out to music on Naming It, provided by Lee England Jr., the soul violinist. He's got those beats and jams, and you can find him on social media at Lee England Jr.
All right, so that's episode 46, because we ain't having an episode 45, because we ain't about that Trump life, yo. We ain't about it. Episode 46, y'all.
What up? Keep naming it, y'all.
Peace.